You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another episode of your favorite podcast, we hope, the M Squared TechCast.
A just short sort of note, the voice you just heard, Foster Brown, doing the intro, passed away last night, and after a 10-year struggle with cancer.
Yeah, a long and courageous battle, certainly.
Yeah, he hung in there a long time. We don't know what the arrangements are yet, whether it's going to be a memorial service or a funeral. We'll share that with the audience for those that want to attend.
Yeah.
But just wanted to say rest in peace, Foster. You will be missed.
Yes, indeed. He was one of the genuinely nice guys in the radio business, for sure.
And we'll continue to use his opening and closings, so his voice will continue on. Even if he hasn't.
You will continue to fan out into the ether,
as they say.
All right. Well, we've got a great show planned for you today. We have our first guest is someone I've worked with in the past, a young man by the name of Dan Keelan, and he and Mike have something of an announcement.
I'll let Dan make the announcement, then I'll fill in behind it.
Okay.
Go ahead, Dan.
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
We're okay.
Good. So, I'm happy to announce that we, over the weekend and today, have launched the beta for a new product called the Michigan Marijuana Report. So think of it as a website, publication, eventually audio and video series all about the business of cannabis. So, you know, there's a kind of a new reality in Michigan. There's a new law. I think people have a lot of questions, a lot of confusion. So we want to talk to what's the new law mean? What are the economic development opportunities? How does it different community by community? Who's investing? Who's building out the new grow facilities in the Detroit area? How are they going to market? And along the way, we're going to look at where successes and failures have happened around the country to see what investors and entrepreneurs can learn from other people.
We're pretty excited. And then you might ask, why is somebody that publishes a technology report getting involved in this? Well, a couple of reasons. Number one, we really cover a lot of entrepreneurs as well. And this has actually been an internal debate for some time. How or should we cover this for entrepreneurs? And decided to make a separate publication because it's really not technology, but it is entrepreneurs. And I think it's going to be a huge market as it develops over the next couple of years.
Eventually, absolutely.
And we're just focused on the business side of it. I mean, what people do, and it'll also be the hemp stuff. I mean, hemp is perfectly legal. There's a lot of medicinal purposes coming out of hemp and things. So we'll be looking at that as well.
And there's an awful lot in the hemp business that involves textiles, too, from rope to clothing to all sorts of things.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's...
And you know there's another funny thing when you mention, you know, a business/tech audience. I have just recently been in some grow facilities, both in Macomb County and in Detroit, and there were some people that were demonstrating the variety of grow lights and ballasts and all that for a large facility. And you know, it's interesting the technology that drives all that. It's pretty cool. We saw a guy basically with his iPhone and Bluetooth connection, controlling the timing and the temperature, the alarms, systems where, certain kinds of lights go on for a certain number of hours, you know, over a 24-hour period. If the temperature goes too high, the fans all kick in. They're able to monitor things like the humidity and that. So there's also an interesting kind of a technology-driven, you know, set of innovations that I see on the product side of this industry. And that'll be part of what we'll cover as well.
Yep. So it's different, somewhat controversial for some, but again, we're just focused on the entrepreneurs and the business and not all the other stuff that goes with it.
Well, and it's going
to
be...
Right, so we want people to read the report because, you know, if they think of it as a new business opportunity, it's going to come with some unknowns. The unknowns kind of make it an interesting opportunity to inform people, to educate people. We're hoping to attract, in addition to a large audience, you know, a large base of experts, whether they're subscribers and contributors or even companies that are sponsoring. Because if you go to an investment counselor or if you go to a lawyer or if you go to a financial advisor because you're opening up your new tennis shoe business, they're going to give you lots of advice. And so this isn't a whole lot different. And I'm trying to separate, you know, any of the controversy probably comes from cultural issues, but the business foundation and the business opportunity that we see in Michigan is an opportunity that, you know, good business people are going to be really interested in.
Okay, so part of the focus, I would imagine, initially in the magazine is you're going to follow the process of the rules being developed, right? That were set up by the approval of the ballot measure back in November.
Yeah, it's kind of a rolling out thing. So, you know, I had an interesting conversation with a guy the other day about, well, then how soon can I actually sell or buy, right? Mm-hmm. Or confusion around I can grow 12 plants in a small facility, that's true, but when can I actually sell those? Or, you know, there's people out there right now that are kind of quasi in the business. Where,
actually, know, more than quasi, away. But they've been underground for a long time. Now they can come to the surface, you know.
Yep.
Sure. But I think you know, Matt's question is good because it doesn't all switch 100% on day one. You know, it rolls all out over time. We see it happening even with our neighbors to, I don't know if you call it the north or the south, but, you know, I was talking to someone who was in Ontario, and similar kinds of a rolling thing where when cannabis became legal in Canada, every province kind of had their own set of rules. And in Ontario, for example, you have to order online and it has to be delivered to you by, you know, a UPS-like service to an address that's a bona fide, you know, Ontario address. So there's steps that all of these rollouts are going to go through. And that's part of what we want to let people know. You know, what can you do today? But I'll tell you, that's not holding back the people I've talked to. The people that are excited about this, the people that are investing, the people that are converting, you know, grow facilities, whether it's, you know, in the whole Ambassador Bridge area in Detroit, or, you know, large facilities that I've walked through in Macomb County. You know, there's real money behind this, and there's jobs at stake, and there's kind of an industry to be built. So, I think we've got a great opportunity to kind of let people know what's next. And, you know, and answer their questions.
Yeah, well, and try to keep people out of trouble because it's going to take a year or more for this to all shake out. And then you got the issue of a lot of communities opting out. You got to know you can't just do it in any place you want because a lot of these communities already say, no way this is going to happen.
Yeah, the community I live in, Dearborn, did a 2-year opt out just because they didn't know what the rules were going to be. They wanted to wait until the rules were in place before they decided whether or not to opt in. Mm-hmm. So, and that's sure. that's not an unreasonable position.
That's the confusion over federal law versus state to state law.
Right.
You know, I think 2 years from now, I mean, who knows, maybe sooner, we're going to look back and we're going to say, okay, you know, if the federal government could basically defer to the states, then you don't have people wondering, like you said, Matt, in a community like Dearborn, what do we do with a new state law to do something that on a federal level is still not legal? Or we don't quite understand if it's legal.
Well, so, and the federal government can go a long way towards making or breaking this business in Michigan, too. I think our former Attorney General Sessions seemed to be dead set against it. I don't know what William Barr's feelings on it are.
So, I don't think it's high on his agenda, as it were. Uh-huh. So,
okay, yeah, but I mean, they could choose to pretty much just ignore, state law and direct law enforcement resources elsewhere, as the Obama administration did, or they can do a bunch of threats and saber rattling like Sessions did. Although he never really came down on states like Colorado, where it's been legal for a while, either. So,
oh gosh, for 5 or 6 years. Oh, Richard's in the studio. Can you turn his mic on?
Yeah.
Yeah, so just an interesting point a lot of people might not be aware of. I have a son who works in the industry in California.
I wasn't. So,
and if you are purchasing online, right, you got to use a credit card. And not a single U.S. credit card agency, that means MasterCard, et cetera, will accept charges for marijuana products of any sort. So they all funnel all the credit card transactions through Cypress.
Really?
And they charge tremendous percentages for that.
Okay.
So, and that's because it's illegal federally.
Yeah. Very,
very. And there's been some talk about something is going to happen on the federal level to take it off the Schedule I drug list and all that jazz.
Yeah.
And that, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say, although there's a lot of speculation, maybe not this year, but next year's an election year.
Yeah,
maybe.
2020 election could have a big impact on this.
Yeah, suddenly the candidates are going, you know, two-thirds of the country says, let's just go with this. Why? What's the big deal, right?
Yeah.
Of course, in the law.
Well, and I think that's why for us it's kind of an exciting thing to kick off, because when you listen to this conversation, there's lots and lots of questions. There's some misinformation, and the rules are going to change as we move along. So, you know, we're at the point right now where, you know, we're using Facebook, we're using LinkedIn, we're using Twitter to sort of build these online, use those platforms to get people interested in the conversation, to get people to sign up for the newsletter itself. And then really to use that, at that kickoff, to keep that conversation going, because if we can kick out more video, if we can get to what you guys are doing with your podcasting, if we can get a regular podcast on this, we're looking as much for an audience of contributors at this point as we are for an audience of readers and subscribers.
Okay, Dan, what's the URL of the publication going to be?
So it's going to be marijuanareport.com.
Okay.
And anybody who wants some information can just go ahead and send an email to info@. And then if you go to LinkedIn or you go to Facebook and search on Michigan Marijuana Report, there's information there. You can like the page. You can follow us there.
Okay. Well, congratulations to both you guys for jumping on this. I'm almost surprised nobody had thought to take up the URL, MI Marijuana Report.
No, I bought it a year ago. I saw the handwriting on the wall.
Okay. Good for you. All right. Well, that's our Mike Brennan and guest Dan Keelan, who are introducing an online publication covering the Michigan marijuana business. It's going to be called MIMarijuanaReport.com. Dan, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks, Mike.
All right, we'll be right back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast. Right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to us at PodcastDetroit.com.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU 5th among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to another segment of the M Squared TechCast.
And we have calling in from Grand Rapids, J.D. Collins, who's the new state director of the Michigan SBDC, Small Business Development Center. Welcome to the show, JD.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's good to be on.
Yes. Well, we work closely with your predecessor, Keith. Now, he's been gone for about a year, and then you took over, I believe, in December, wasn't it?
Yes, December 17th is my day, and huge thanks for Keith for actually mentoring me as I was going through the interview process. So Keith is also a friend, and left the SBDC in great shape for me.
So tell me a little bit, tell our listeners about what services the Michigan SBDC provides. What does the organization actually do?
Sure. So the Michigan SBDC is a group of about 90 people throughout the state of Michigan. There are 11 offices throughout the state of Michigan. And we touch all 83 counties, and we help small businesses get their start or help businesses grow. And we do that through one-on-one consulting that we conduct with our consultants throughout the state.
And, oh, sorry, Matt.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, you have a colorful background. I know you have an Amway in there somewhere, but why don't we talk a little about what's your background? What do you bring to the SBDC?
I bring a lot of different color to the SBDC. With my background, I started off by using technology to solve business problems before kind of breaking out into small business myself. And I recently started consulting with small businesses and realized that I'd be able to broaden my reach helping small businesses by joining forces with the SBDC and taking my small list of clients and being able to multiply that multiple times over by working with the SBDC. And so that's what really drew me, is affecting the state in which we live, bringing more success, helping small businesses succeed in the state of Michigan.
All right. So where does the SBDC have offices? If I'm, say, in the Detroit area in the suburbs here and I want SBDC services, where do I call? Who do I call?
So absolutely. You can always visit the SBDC's website and the offices in the Detroit area. We once again, we do cover all 83 counties. And I think the local affiliate there is affiliated with Eastern Michigan University. Wendy Thomas is our regional director in that area. And by going through our website, we could hook you up with a consultant. And depending on whether you're looking to grow, if you're looking for technology commercialization, if you're looking to start, we'll have the right consultant with you, because we offer consultancies with different types of specialties, whether that be in technology commercialization or helping your small business grow.
All right, 90 people, that's a pretty big operation. Where does your funding come from? Where does the SBDC's funding come from?
So it's a combination of funding that starts with the Small Business Administration, so the SBA, but then is matched by state funds as well. And then through our host relationships that we have, our funding comes from the host as well, either in kind, giving us office space to actually conduct our business, or in some forms of other matching funds. And so it's a combination of funds that really make it work on behalf of Michigan businesses.
How many clients are you guys serving typically in a year? I know it used to be in the 10,000 range. Is it still in that range?
Well, the 10,000 would be a record for us, but we really look at it in a number of different ways. First of all, we look at it in new business starts, and we look at small business starts as kind of a key factor in our success in any given year. And 2018 was a huge year for us, meeting or exceeding all of our goals that we have with the federal government. And so in 2018, we were about 390 new business starts. We had about 5,500 businesses that we consulted with that created about 5,500 jobs within the state of Michigan.
Is it
criteria that we measure success on is in capital formation?
Yeah, that would be my next
capital
question.
Formation. Go ahead.
No, that was my next question, is I was trying to put some money behind this. How do you quantify this?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. And capital formation is another one of those criteria. And through our efforts, we had about $200 million in capital formation for small businesses within the state of Michigan.
Wow. So what kind of funding sources?
So when we go to the Hill and we talk about return on investment, we think we have a pretty good return on investment for those taxpayer dollars.
Yeah, I'd say 90 people creating 5,000 jobs. That's a pretty good payback, I'd say. So what kind of funding sources do you link to?
I'm sorry, can you ask that question again, please?
Sure. What kind of funding sources for small businesses and startups do you link to? What, you know, who do you provide connections with?
Oh, that's a good question. We provide, obviously, access to capital through traditional funding sources like the banks, also SBA loans, as well as that grants that we administer as well.
Okay. In the technology space, how many folks do you have working with technology companies? Is it, you know, more than a dozen, less?
You know, once again, technology, making sure that the SBDC remains relevant, we realize that we have to be experts in technology and devoted to technology commercialization. That team is around 8 or 9 right now, plus experts throughout the state and the individual areas as well. So I would say that we're under a dozen, but hovering right around that number as far as our experts go in that space.
Oh, go ahead, Matt.
No, you go.
And do you get a lot of questions in that particular area? I mean, are you dealing with a lot of technology startups or at least maybe second stage companies?
We certainly aren't seeing any slowdown, right? The demand for the technology commercialization is very high.
Well, I was
business verticals that we're consulting with.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what are some of the biggest industries that you cover? Where do you see the most action in terms of new company formation?
You cut out there in the middle, but I will. I'll see if I can paraphrase here. What are we seeing as current trends in the market? We are once again not seeing much slowdown at all in the marketplace. In fact, we were just having a conversation around this over lunch today, and we're seeing that. There seems to be an influx of individuals coming from out of state wanting to start business in the state of Michigan. I think we're becoming known as being business friendly, and through the partnerships that we have, a great place to start and grow a business.
Okay, I was going to ask you, what I was trying to ask you when I cut out was, what industries are you seeing the most growth in terms of new company formation? So I know tech is up there, but what else is hot right now?
You know, we're seeing defense as a huge opportunity, as well as we'll call it traditional manufacturing. And then another area that we're seeing is in the training sector. We're seeing a huge shortage of trained and skilled labor these days, and the training of those individuals is an area that we're seeing an uptick in interest in starting new small businesses around training the next generation of worker.
Training is actually, I get a lot of press releases from your various regional headquarters about different kinds of training. What is the most popular training? I mean, it seems like everybody, not everybody, but I mean, all the entrepreneurs I ever meet clearly have some crazy idea they think is going to work. But beyond that, they don't know how to start a business. Is that where you're seeing a lot of your training and focus?
You know, certainly the basics and the training are obviously in high demand, but in some specialty services, we're also seeing some increased demand. We have a sell seminar that helps people who are interested in buying businesses or selling their business go through that process. We're seeing a huge uptick in demand for those services. And then cybersecurity is another area where we're seeing training demand increase. And it's increased to the point where we now have a cybersecurity specialist to help drive awareness in the cybersecurity area.
Well, we have somebody sitting next to me, Richard Steenan, who's our resident cybersecurity expert. He's written a number of books, including There Will Be Cyber War. Is his mic on? Go ahead and say hi to JD.
Hey, JD, this sounds great. And I must say, I've been essentially in cybersecurity training for most of my career because that's all I do is talk and write about it. But I've noticed an uptick in school systems that are teaching cybersecurity. As a matter of fact, I'm going to an attack and penetration class tonight at Macomb Community College to
lecture them. Is
that
red flag, blue flag kind of thing? Or
Yeah. I mean, sometimes just the basic of getting your certified ethical hacker
certification,
which is most of the universities here in Michigan are using that as the anchor for what their training is.
Some of that's even seeping down to the K-12 level, because I know there's some cybersecurity training that Lawrence Tech's professors do as part of our relationships with some of the schools, K-12 schools that we have relationships with, from Detroit to Southfield to West Bloomfield.
Yeah, I've got a problem with all the move. DHS pushed heavily on teaching cybersecurity in grade school, which I think is a total waste of time.
Yeah.
But certainly by the time somebody is in 11th or 12th grade, they could be thinking about acquiring these skills.
Yeah.
And that's where all the jobs are. There's just tremendous amount of job openings in that cybersecurity
area. 2 million vacancies worldwide, 300,000 in the U.S.
And that's like the one that you make the most money on starting out, right? Of course, you're not a baldy millionaire like yourself. Wouldn't need to worry about things like that.
Yeah,
right?
But you can start. You can start at 50K, and within 2 years, be making 150K.
Yeah, that's good money.
Okay.
Are you taking any parallels to the need for social media training as well? And that is not only the use of it as a marketing tool, but also the appropriate uses and being able to distinguish between the what we'll call the real and the fake news out there for consumption. Mm. Are you guys seeing any uptick in that as well?
Yeah, it's seeping into the guys who teach cybersecurity awareness. So like Dan Lorman's company,
mm-hmm.
and they're starting to add in that capability to determine the veracity of the news you're reading.
Spot the bot. Yep. Yes, right.
Yeah,
okay.
Dan, by the way, is the former chief information security officer for the state of Michigan, and he's on the show every other month or so. We alternate with Richard, and he's with a company called Security Mentor. Still lives in the Lansing area, I
Grand
guess.
Ledge, I think.
Grand Ledge.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, we have such talented people that come on the show here.
So, JD, getting back to the SBDC, could you just is there anything new at the SBDC that you'd like to highlight at this point?
Yeah, absolutely. We have an annual event called Michigan Celebrate Small Business coming
up. Oh, sure. Yep.
Where businesses throughout the state have been nominated as a 50 to watch, and we'll be announcing that 50 to watch here shortly, and that'll in a gala that'll happen later on this year where those awardees will be recognized for their outstanding contribution to small business in the state of Michigan. So we're really looking at that Michigan Celebrate Small Business Gala, as well as some new announcements with Michigan Celebrate Small Business and some ancillary services that'll be offered to those 50 to watch awardees.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to that. I know MI Tech News, my day job, we're a media sponsor of your...
He's got about six day jobs,
I'm an entrepreneur. You got to keep hustling, right? Yeah. But certainly we'll promote that when that gets announced. I think that's great. I know it's... I've met the winners. They're real excited about that. They get a chance typically to meet the governor. Now, I know Governor Snyder was a big supporter of that. I'm only assuming that Governor Whitmer will be as well, right?
All indications are that Governor Whitmer is a huge supporter of small business, and it'll be great to have her involved as well.
Okay, we've only got a minute left or so, so why don't you give the folks the website information where they can reach out to the Michigan Small Business Development Center?
And sure. If you want to meet one-on-one for personal consulting, or if you're interested in starting a business or growing your business, you can reach out by going to the SBDC's website. And from there, you can be put in touch with a consultant that can help you out with your needs.
All right. And that's sbdcmichigan.org for the website.
Thank you very much.
All right. J.D. Collins, State Director of the Michigan Small Business Development Center, was our guest here. J.D., thanks for being with us today.
It was great talking with you guys. I appreciate the time.
All right. We will be right back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast at PodcastDetroit.com.
What do you get at Lawrence Technological University? Everything. Great labs and studios, supportive professors, plus a full campus life, NAIA athletics, and all the software you need to succeed. Be smart. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University is all about opportunities. You learn beyond the campus, doing real-world research for top companies and honing your skills through co-ops and internships. Apply what you learn. Be challenged. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another fun-filled segment of the M Squared TechCast.
And we have in studio James Candler, who is 123, and that's Chief Operations Officer, and also some other, you're the voice specialist, is that right?
Yeah, I'm the guy that takes care of this, the phone switch.
Ah, okay, great. And with him, as always, is Ihor Diachenko, and he's the marketing director, and I might add 123 Dad is one of our sponsors. Okay.
All right.
Shameless plug, Bill, there. So let's talk a little bit about a new service that you're offering. It's, it gets to voice over through your data center, through your fiber. Tell us all about it.
So we've got a network here that we provide voice services with. And the latest voice service that we're providing is a hosted IP PBX voice solution. And with that, what we're allowed to do is we're allowed to replace traditional phone systems that people have at their offices. So when it comes time for those customers to upgrade their systems, maybe they don't want to upgrade into older technology and they're looking to get the newest and greatest things. So they go ahead and they purchase something that's a hosted platform with a phone company.
Hmm. All right. So this essentially, you know, people have been going to VoIP for years now. How is this an advance over existing VoIP type services?
What happens is with the hosted systems, you no longer have that phone system at the customer's premise. So if the customer loses power, or if for whatever reason the customer has a cut phone line because of people digging in the area or whatever the case is, they don't get service to their phone system anymore. Since that phone system is no longer on the customer premise, you're able to keep your phones up and running if people are trying to contact you. And with the hosted system, if you can't get connectivity to the customer prem, the hosted system may have other ways to get connectivity to that customer via their cell phones, or maybe do a failover to another site, or things like that. Things that are programmed that allow it to seamlessly fail over to some other place without people calling in to don't understand what's going on. They might have no clue that the customer is having an outage.
Huh. But on premise, though, they still have some kind of handset kind of thing, traditional phone setup. Yes.
Yeah. So they have phones that look like a normal phone handset, and right. Those phones kind of dial back into our network.
Sure.
And phone home.
Phone home
to connect up to the hosted system, and they're able to take and receive calls that way. There's also iPhone and Android applications that do the same type of thing, where you can connect to that phone system, the hosted PBX system, and you're able to make calls out as you're a part of that hosted system.
Okay, is this a new service or something you've been developing for a while?
Well, that's an interesting question, because we've dabbled with voice over IP for a long time. Back in the early 2000s, we were doing voice over IP. I was actually over in Germany. And I had one of these voice over IP handsets that would phone home into the 123.net network, and I was able to make calls to local numbers here for free across the internet.
Can't beat that.
And from there, we went and we decided that we wanted to start dabbling in voice over IP with this hosted type solution, and we started with the BroadSoft platform, and we were running that for a few years, and We decided that at that time that it was a little bit too early to adopt the technology, so we kind of put it on the side for then, and just the past couple of years now we've actually dug back into it, and now that the technology has matured, we've decided that it's time to go ahead and start deploying this to our customer base.
Yeah, well, we should probably talk about your facilities. Certainly what this is you're layering more things on top of what you already have, and what you already have is fairly impressive. That multi-story building I visited in Southfield, the data center, the Carrier Hotel. Talk a little bit about that and how this connects there.
Sure. So the Carrier Hotel, that's there on Northwestern Highway in Southfield there. It's a 7-story building. We actually, in the early 2000s, were in the basement of the building, just a small little tenant down there. And that's where we got our start. And as we started growing, we got two additional data centers that were across the street. We started filling them up, and we came to a point where we said we needed to expand some more. And we were thinking about either getting additional buildings, or it just so happened that was at the big downturn in the market, and the building that we were in was actually going up for sale. So we said instead of going ahead and finding another building that we'd have to go and repurpose, we'd just go ahead and build out in the current building that we were in by purchasing it.
Yeah.
So are you in the entire building then, the whole seven-story?
So the entire building belongs to us.
Okay.
And we've got data center space on probably about 50% of the space that's there today.
Okay.
And the other 50 is just office space then?
We have office space for ourselves. We have a few clients that lease out some space from us also.
Okay.
All right. So essentially what you're talking about is having one connection for both voice and data, right? One circuit kind of?
So the neat thing about the hosted platform is that you're able to take that information and put it over your data line. So you can have it at your main office, and you're able to buy a big pipe to get your data from. And at the same time, you can get that phone service across it without having to dedicate additional phone circuits for the phone lines.
Mm-hmm.
The other cool thing about it is if you want to have remote offices, you can actually have those remote offices phone home into the hosted system also.
Ah. So everybody thinks of Vonage. I mean, that's the big national competitor. How do you compare against them?
So I would consider Vonage more of a residential play,
mm-hmm.
where they're just taking a couple line type of customers. So either single line residential or possibly a very small business, and interfacing that way. Where what we do is we take customers that have multiple locations, customers that have anywhere from 20, 30 lines at a location to some places that we have that have hundreds of phone handsets that are at those locations.
Wow.
And we're able to service them and keep them up and running and deliver their calls.
Mike, I wanted to mention is that one of the key things here is that all of our products are all integrated.
Mm-hmm.
So you're actually running, whether it's actually the voice services, the hosted, going through our database or data center, I'm sorry. Chances are we're utilizing our fiber existing internet lines. So all of it being, and once again, I keep on saying it's end-to-end solution, but unfortunately, as being a cliche, it's true. It's being able to provide our customers with every single possibility to run their business effectively, to be able to communicate, utilizing whether it's internet, phone services, redundancy and data storage. All these things actually kind of utilize it. It fits our space extremely well, especially our voice technology.
Do you have disaster recovery, things like that as well?
Absolutely. So we have facilities on-premise as well that if there are any issues with customers or anyone that's actually in our data center, they can utilize the facilities themselves, phone services that are hooked up within the facilities to be able to go ahead and whether it's temporary or long term, we have the facilities to be able to accommodate.
Always on with 123.net, right?
Absolutely.
So, what other bold new fields are you looking at that you can share with us besides this? How are you going to layer more stuff on top of this, or is that you got a lot on your plate right now and you need to digest this, or what?
We've got our voice services, we've got our fixed wireless services, and our fiber services. And the neat thing that we have is we have a product that we're able to fail over between services. So you're able to get a fiber line put into your business. And at the same time, we can offer you, if you're in our service areas, a fixed wireless line as a backup solution. So if somebody down the road wants to, take a backhoe and cut that fiber line, you're not going to be down for the count. You're going to be able to fail over to that fixed wireless solution, and while we're out there busily fixing the fiber line, you're going to still be able to perform and operate your business.
All right. So I'm not sure how much you want to share, but I mean, how big is your business base now? If you're going to, how many companies do you work with? Can you kind of give us some scale here?
Being Michigan based, I mean, we've got thousands of customers. We mentioned earlier just from our, voice services, we have several thousand customers. So essentially a lot of them will either utilize our technologies, other products or other services. But for the most part, once again, it really depends whether it's dedicated internet, whether it's actually utilizing our data centers, having four of them here in the United States, in Michigan. But once again, we're predominantly in Michigan itself. So, we continue on growing because of all the services that we offer. And as companies are coming into Michigan themselves and they're growing rapidly, they're taking advantage of really our expansive fiber network, our internet services and everything that we're able to offer in unique locations, whether it's here in Metro Detroit or in Western Michigan.
Clearly, Southeast Michigan is your biggest market, but I mean, we talked about this before. You're pretty much all over the state now, right?
Yes, absolutely. So our fiber network continues on growing, once again, across the state. But one of the things that, once again, looking at in correlation to the businesses, businesses are growing as well. The Michigan market is expanding. So question always comes up, well, do we want to go ahead and go outside of Michigan? Well, we want to stay focused here in Michigan, make sure that our footprint expands as well as helping other businesses here in Michigan evolve and scale to their business. And our services, once again, whether it's voice, whether it's fiber, whether it's actually our data center services, continue on growing with these companies. So we see continued growth and hopefully as Michigan prospers, everyone actually prospers.
Yeah.
How is the level of traffic that your network is handling? How has that been growing? Is it growing, hockey stick, that kind of thing? Or because I know we all hear about the Internet of Things and everything being, having a sensor on it and reporting someplace and creating all this mounds of new data. Well, you guys carry that data, right? So what do you see as the trends there?
Absolutely. So I think that, once again, based on mobility, based on what's happening, you're hearing a lot more in news about what GM is doing with obviously autonomous vehicles. You're hearing what Ford is doing. You're hearing all these automotive companies that are suppliers are following suit. A lot of this is based on how much traffic, how much information is flowing in. We're supporting that whole movement. Mobility is key in really our growth, our infrastructure, and we're actually expanding and evolving with that whole industry.
Yeah, and you'll have an outstanding opportunity in Corktown when that little railroad station opens up, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So once again, with everything that's changing and we continuously grow our fiber network and helping out a lot of these suppliers and major organizations, I think for us, in addition to, as we mentioned in the past, the Detroit Internet Exchange, it's all critical and part of the equation for the growth of our organization and for Michigan.
We're down to a minute, so this is where we let you do your shameless plug, talk about how people can find you, reach out to you. How do they do that?
Well, it's very simple. Just go to www.123.net. And we'll be able to go ahead and provide you with all the information you actually like to search for, whether it's data center, co-location services, voice services, or any of our network services.
And I would imagine you're also always interested in technical talent as well. That's also the site for that, right?
Absolutely. And all you have to do is just add // careers afterwards and take us or take you to our site.
Okay.
Okay.
So thanks very much, James Kendler and Ihor Diachenko from 123.net.
I just wanted to hear you say that name. That's why I tossed it over to you. So
I worked on it for a while.
Good job.
Thank you very much. But thank you again, and we'll have you back on the show again next month, and I'll owe you a video here. We'll have to get over and shoot the video here of this young man.
Absolutely. Appreciate it. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thanks, guys.
Yep. We'll be right back with another segment of the M2 TechCast right now. This is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're indeed listening to the M2 TechCast at podcastdetroit.com.
Lawrence Technological University is more than a school. It's a launchpad for your future, offering industry-leading facilities and 100-plus programs that are ranked among the nation's best. Be unstoppable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Mike Brennan.
And Matt Roush.
And we're back with one more segment here on the M Squared TechCast. M Squared, of course, means the Matt and Mike show, but there was already an ESPN show sounding similar, and we didn't want to get sued by him, right?
So Ralph, yeah. Not that there could be much confusion, I don't think.
No,
so.
I guess not.
Okay.
But we have with us in studio an old friend of mine, gosh, a man that's been in this tech community in Michigan all the way back to RustNet, Richard Steenen.
And Richard comes on once a month to scare the crap out of us,
yep,
basically.
He's got another good one, too. He keeps coming up with new ideas for the sequel to Cyber Stiletto, and this might be the one here. This one really intrigued me.
Mm. Yeah, this one gives a lot of background on how you actually operate a cyber intrusion team. It's called Project Raven, and Reuters did an amazing story. It was just published late last week, and they came up with the fact that or found about eight people who came from the U.S. intelligence agencies, mostly the NSA.
Like spooks, right?
Spooks. But, you know, it's hard to call them spooks, but we all know that the NSA does hacking, right?
Right.
And we're most likely involved, especially mm-hmm. in the New York Times says we're involved in Stuxnet, for instance.
Right.
And there was a group inside the NSA called the Tailored Access Operations Group that created all these hacking tools. Some of them are still haunting us because at least one of them was behind NotPetya and WannaCry before that.
Oh, geez.
So,
well, they get out in the wild and the bad guys just re-engineer them.
Tweak yeah, a little.
Once yeah, you use right. them or once you find them, then everybody gets access to them. But this is a new twist on all of this, all the problem that we have with intelligence agencies doing massive hacking is in that the people who do it have all these skills and maybe are morally compromised because they think it's okay to do it as long as you're fighting terrorists, right? Mm-hmm. It must be a good thing.
Well, the money's good too, I think.
The money's extremely good. So they've got stories from eight people, only one of whom allowed her name to be used.
Hmm.
And Kathleen Stroud is kind of infamous internally because she happened to be based in Hawaii running Booz Allen's, you know, consulting group for the NSA when this kid, Edward Snowden, came along.
I was going to say, Booz Allen, Hawaii. That yeah. all sounds familiar.
Exactly.
Right?
She hired him from Dell into Booz on her team.
And the rest, as they say, is history.
Yeah. Yeah. So her career was, you know, looking at being terminated. Anyways, when she got an offer to join this really cool operation in United Arab Emirates.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, you know, she probably doubles her salary and gets to go to UAE and work in this palace environment.
Yeah, well, I'm told it's really a nice place. Never been. But
never been. I'm not sure I want to go, considering some of the things that go on there.
Yes.
And, you know, the initial thing was, hey, you're going to work with the government or, you know, the royalty. And you're going to identify people who are, you know, trying to do us harm, so terrorists and activists, which quickly flows over into journalists. And you're going to spy on them, basically. You're going to mm-hmm. break into their cell phones, you know, steal their communications, et cetera. And then there's this kind of pivot where all of a sudden they found they're working for a company called Dark Matter.
Mm.
Dark Matter is a company that I first noticed when I was going to big conferences in Europe. They would have a booth that was, you know, probably, I don't know, 10,000 square feet.
Wow.
So, you know, those booths cost $500,000 in order to put in place in those Oof. Conferences. And you know, they had a little kitchen and you could have coffee and drinks and all the rest. And they were initially put together by an entrepreneur in UAE who went to the Crown Prince and he said, you know, you shouldn't be spending all this money on Checkpoint and Cisco. Well, certainly not Checkpoint because they're Israeli, but Cisco and all these U.S. companies. We should have our own cybersecurity industry. So the prince gave this guy $200 million startup funding to create the all-in-one cybersecurity company. So, of course, they got involved in intelligence kind of activity. They're working on a secure phone so that the NSA can't hack into people's conversations, etc. So all of a sudden, the people at Dark Matter working for the National Intelligence Agency of UAE called NISA are giving directions to these teams to hack Americans. That's when they started to realize that, you know what, it's, you know, maybe it's moral or not to hack other people, but we know it's illegal for an American to hack an American. And that's when they started talking to Reuters, and now we know the story. And this whole thing raises these, you know, really big issues, you know, because every intelligence agency underpays their people. Sure. Most of them are now working there from, you know, patriotism and loyalty. But, you know, you got kids going to college and you can make $400,000 a year doing the same thing for somebody else. And this is going to happen. And you're going to have people who, and there, we know that, several.
That's
who,
how spies are made.
That's how spies are made.
Yeah. Because even a GS-12 is not making that much money, right? Yeah.
The most you make as a government employee is about $189,000. And I don't think any level one analysts are making that much anyway.
No, no. Half that probably.
Right. Yeah. The director makes $189,000, right? So, yeah, big opportunity to cash in on, you know, your 15 years that you put in of boring work. And it becomes a little more exciting because you've got all these great targeting opportunities and you get to hack.
Kind of the thesis of Cyber Stiletto, that she did the same thing, our fictional character. Just saw the money was so much better on the dark side, so what the heck?
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yep, a freelancer, and there are a lot of those. Mm-hmm. And I suspect next we'll find some of those, you know, complete freelancers. There are people who set up consulting companies that are trying to help people defend against the kinds of things they did. And that's what, you know, all the security companies coming out of Israel. All those people got their training and their 3-year mandatory service in Unit 8200.
Right.
Well, sure, you want to talk about a country that's under attack all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
That's so they see stuff.
So they got to be good.
And they're doing attacking, right?
Yeah. Right. Oh, sure.
And counterattacking and all the rest. Yep. So those guys come out really knowing. There's one company called Cyber Reason, and they hint that the founder was the guy on Stuxnet that helped the NSA, because we knew Israel was involved in some way. So they hint at it. They can't say that they did that.
Yeah. I actually, when I did that Israeli event almost 2 years ago, we had to turn over all of our cell phones to them while the general in charge of that unit came in to brief us.
Right.
Because they didn't want any recordings. They wanted any pictures.
Yep.
So I said, make sure I get that back. That's a $1,000 cell phone, right?
Good thing you had the little lapel thing.
I did. Yeah, I recorded the whole thing and, you know.
The spy center on
Went to the spy shop. And
spy shop.
Yeah.
I love that store.
It was crazy because we.
That's the spy on your babysitter central type thing, right?
Yeah.
So okay.
It was crazy because the guy's name is. Was in the public. Everyone knew he was the general in charge of the units. We're all going, why are we doing this? I mean, in the briefing was real milquetoast, kind of general, that everybody already knew. And so it was
probably the kind of introductory talk you get at the Michigan Cyber Range or something. Right? Yeah.
And at the end, we're all looking at each other going, what? You know, so, but hey, they're paranoid about security.
Yeah. And it's a security theater, we call it, right?
Yeah.
We're going to be scared, so no cell phones.
It's like, I was going to say, it's like the people who put the cell phones in the refrigerator if they want to talk politics, right?
So that's right.
The same kind of thing.
That's right, which, you know, and thanks, you know, if we want to bring up the bug in Apple.
Yeah, that's where I was going with that. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. So now all of a sudden FaceTime has this, like, zero-day bug where anybody can ask you to join a conference call with a bunch of other people but not alert you that you've joined.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, they get, you know, your kids can be eavesdropping on you if you haven't updated. Or right now, the advice is turn off FaceTime altogether.
Oh yeah.
Wait till the update, which is a couple weeks out yet from Apple.
Yeah, they were supposed to release that Friday, but they didn't quite make their deadline.
No, they didn't make the deadline.
Yeah. Oops. Okay.
Yeah.
And Microsoft always has Patch Tuesday, right? So
once a month. Yeah.
So they're always having issues that need to be updated, and that's actually the biggest bugaboo, I think, is. Particularly with the big companies, is they're not doing their patches. They're not doing their. That's where the security vulnerability comes in, right?
Yeah, and you know, when I first got into advising large enterprises, I made the newbie mistake of, you know, there's a new vulnerability in Sun Solaris. Remember that? Take it way back.
Sure.
So I immediately issued an alert to all of Gartner's clients, patch immediately. And I got all these calls from CIOs going, you idiot. You know, we have 2,000 Sun servers, and it takes a week to schedule the downtime to patch them. And
so tell us, but don't make it public.
It's going to be a rolling, you know, 6 months before 2,000 servers are patched. Wow. And in the meantime, there'll be three more vulnerabilities that we have to attack. So it's not possible.
Yeah.
So protect them, but you can't patch them.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then home users, you know, it's like, who's going to, you know, have you ever patched your router for your home internet? Yeah. Probably not.
Well,
luckily, I got a new one from Comcast when they discovered that vulnerability. Right. What was that, last year or year before last? And they had to send everybody new routers.
Yeah, yeah, the Linksys vulnerabilities.
Yeah,
and you can, you know, maybe just by rebooting, you get the new OS, or you can. There's a phone number you can call with Comcast and punch in your number, and they'll reload the software, which you should probably do every time your system slows down.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not a bad idea, actually, for a home user. You know, even just unplugging and replugging it in every so often, if it slows down, it's probably something weird in there.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. Exactly. Or the way that they've configured their network, and you've got the old settings, et cetera.
Yeah.
The other hot tip for listeners who do use Comcast, don't use their DNS. Use Google's 8.8.8.8. You can remember that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Comcast, 90% of their problems are that they can't figure out DNS properly. You know, if you ever notice you can't get to a web page, it takes forever, and then all of a sudden it loads finally.
Yeah.
That's Comcast DNS doing them.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Got it.
All right.
So other than that, those mercenaries making money, what else is going on out there that's hot?
Well, I've been thinking about the annual threat assessment that comes from our intelligence agencies. We just saw them on television addressing the Senate last week. Mm-hmm. And there's a printed document that goes with that. For the first time ever, they didn't say, and Rachel Maddow pointed this out, they didn't say that there's the possibility that or China and Russia have the capability to shut down our power grid.
But we have the capability to shut down theirs as well, right?
We don't know that, but you can assume so.
Yeah.
But for the first time ever, they changed the wording to say that China and Russia are likely to shut down our power grid. Mm. So not just have the capability, are already in place. Mm-hmm. They've already got enough agents, bots. Deployed so that they could shut down our grid.
That was my first thought when we all got that emergency message about turning the thermostats down last week.
Yeah.
I was like, oh boy, here we go. But it turns out it was just a fire. But hey,
But fires can be a result of a cyber attack.
Yeah.
Right? Because you overload something and make it heat up and burn. So the question is, are we ever going to get a truthful, accurate report about what happened?
Hmm.
You know, and
possibly, possibly not.
Yeah, every time we get reports, it's like, oh, you know, user error, somebody stumbled, somebody's smoking,
tree limb fell on the line,
Squirrel died, electric motor failed. Yeah, right.
Yep,
okay.
Yep. Have you ever talked to a power line operator? You know, the guys go around the trucks after storms and all that. They have a dead fried squirrel in the back of their truck.
Because
they have to send a report of what happened. And if they can't diagnose, you know, when a tree branch, they just throw the squirrel on the ground and take a picture of it and send it in.
Wow.
Okay.
That's like one of those throw down guns when somebody gets shot, right?
Exactly. You know, exactly.
Okay. Wow. So cool. Well, not cool, but it's always fascinating, right? I just had this conversation this morning. People don't realize the Third World War actually is being fought right now in cyberspace, but it's so below the radar that no one really knows what's going on. But it's got to be really good stuff.
It's a little bit of a continuation of the Cold War, right? Because it's a struggle between the major powers for, you know, economic dominance and some political influence dominance.
Sure.
But it all comes back to oil, always.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, the Soviet Union was never really a superpower. It was a relatively small country with a bunch of nuclear weapons.
Yeah, it was a super threat.
Yeah.
And it still is.
And it's the same way now. Yeah. It's just a different crew in charge.
Yeah, it's much less of an economic power than it ever was.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I was going to say, you had a bunch of allegedly ideological communists in power before. Now you've got just essentially
Russian mob is running the country.
Yeah, the mob's running the country.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And some say the mob is running this country, but we won't go into that.
Okay. So, I'd like to think there are still some democratic institutions here. Yeah. I'm sure there are.
Like
I hope there
that.
Are. Yep. Yes, right.
How are we doing, Jess? Okay. 1 minute, okay.
So thinking about threat assessments.
Yes.
So that's how the government does it. So in organizations that do so-called risk management, why don't they do threat assessments? So I'm trying to put together my thoughts on what would it take to be able to do a similar threat assessment. I've seen it done at RSA, the security division of EMC Dell right now. I've seen what they actually have to do to put that together. Lockheed Martin actually can do a threat assessment on a weekly basis. But it'd be the sort of thing that I think should be go right up to the board and give a complete threat assessment. Who's targeting us? So it's going to be competitors, insiders, cyber criminals, and nation states. And you know, maybe anonymous if you're publicly out there and they don't like you for some reason. Like I think the Detroit casinos are getting a lot of hassle right now. Detroit itself is getting hassle because they're threatening to turn down people's gas, right?
Yeah,
so they're getting attacked right now.
Oh, good.
All right.
All right. Well, I'm getting the signal that we need to wrap, and we don't want to go against Jessica here. So,
no.
If folks
speaking
want to
of cyber threats,
yes, that's more of a physical threat. So,
cyber Jessica.
Yes. So, if folks want to reach out to you, what's the best way?
Just find me on Twitter at Cyberwar.
All right. I want to thank Richard Steenan for, as usual, scaring the bejesus out of us here today with some good information, and our other guest, James Candler of 123.net, and Dyachenko?
Ihor Dyachenko. Crazy Ukrainian.
Okay, yeah. From 123.net, who told us all about their company's new voice services. J.D. Collins, the new state director for the Michigan Small Business Development Center, and Dan Keelan talking about a new online magazine, MI Marijuana
Report.com.
Yep. Check it out with Mr. Mike Brennan. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And this is Mike Brennan.
And we'll be back with you at 2 o'clock Eastern Time next Monday with more of the M Squared TechCast.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.